We welcome you again to the Mormon Channel. You're listening to the program Past Impressions. I'm Brent Topp, the chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. I'm your host, and we are honored today to have as our guest Dr. Milton V. Backman, Emeritus Professor of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. A couple of personal observations of my appreciation for the great work that Milt has done through the years is Milt may not even remember me, but I was an undergraduate freshman student of Dr. Backman's in a U.S. history class many years ago. So I've had the privilege of being taught by Dr. Backman both as an undergraduate and as a graduate student, and then having many years of having him as my colleague. And so, Milt, we're really glad to have you with us. Let me tell you, our audience, a little bit about Dr. Milton Backman. Dr. Backman was born and raised in Salt Lake and Los Angeles and is a veteran and served in the Air Force during the Korean War. And we are grateful that he went on and got a Ph.D. degree in history from the University of Pennsylvania, and he has made such a great contribution in the field of history. Following the death of his first wife, he married Sharon Ritchie, and they are the parents of 12 children and 53 grandchildren. Milt taught history in Texas and then came to Brigham Young University and taught for nearly 40 years, 38 years, teaching courses in U.S. history, LDS church history, and Christian religions. I think one of the things that we really appreciate is your scholarship that has endured long beyond even just your classroom teaching experiences. Milt's the author of 8 books and 40 articles, and I personally think that your book, Heavens Resound, is probably the best thing that's ever been written on the Kirtland period. And that's what we're going to talk about today, Milt, is about that Kirtland period. So thank you again for being our guest, and we're glad to have you with us. So, okay, Milt, why is the Ohio experience so important in the history of the church? You know, our audience, our listeners can go to the inside cover of the Doctrine and Covenants and see all those Kirtland revelations, but why don't you explain to us the relationship of Kirtland and New York and why it is such an important period of time in the history of the church?
Well, during the 1830s, there were two gathering places, Ohio and Missouri. Ohio was more important in one respect because that's where Joseph lived most of the time, and where Joseph lived was the headquarters of the church. And this was one of the most remarkable periods in the history of the church and in the history of the world in many respects, especially when you consider the visions of Joseph Smith, the revelations of Joseph Smith, and his doctrinal contributions. Let's just consider the visions of Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith was different from all other religious leaders. He's the only religious leader who surrounded himself with an array of witnesses of visions. Now, down through the years, there have been many people who have claimed visions, but Joseph is the only one who testified that he saw heavenly beings and there were witnesses present. Mm-hmm. And the Ohio period was really an extension of New York, because remember in New York, Joseph had vision after vision, from the first vision to Moroni, and he had witnesses. For example, Oliver Cowdery was a witness of the translation of the Book of Mormon. Oliver was a witness of the restoration of the Aaronic priesthood. In fact, that event was one of the most significant in history in one sense, because two men were together, they saw a heavenly being, they felt the hands of the heavenly being upon their head, they saw, they heard, and they felt, and both wrote accounts of the experience. And incidentally, the accounts were initially published in detail in Ohio. So Joseph received vision after vision. And then, of course, we had the testimony of the witnesses of the Book of Mormon, the 3 witnesses and the 8 witnesses. That was all important. But meanwhile, in Ohio, Joseph continued to receive vision after vision. And one of the differences, the Ohio visions were documented. That is, we have references to many people appearing to the prophet Joseph Smith before he began the translation, but we don't have details. But in Ohio, we have details, recordings of different people who witnessed the events. Take, for example, the appearance of the Father and the Son. No, Joseph had a remarkable experience during the first vision of seeing the Father and the Son. But most people do not realize it. But the Father and the Son appeared to Joseph Smith and others four different occasions in Ohio. That's very significant.
That is remarkable.
And we have the appearance of the Father and the Son to Joseph in Hiram, Ohio. We have and Sidney Rigdon was present and helped record detailed account of the vision. We have a appearance of the Father and the Son to members of the School of the Prophets, and several different individuals recorded their experience of seeing the Father and the Son. Mm-hmm. We have the appearance of the Father and the Son in the Kirtland Temple, and that's one of our revelations in the Doctrine and Covenants, where he saw the Father and the Son and many other heavenly beings. So again and again, the Father and the Son appeared to the prophet Joseph Smith, and we have detailed recordings of that event. And then, in addition to these visions, Joseph continued to receive revelations, so that during the Ohio period, half of all the revelations in our Doctrine and Covenants were recorded. And during the Ohio period, far more than half of the work on the inspired revision of the Bible took place. So thus, we have a vast amount of doctrinal information that's unfolded as a result of the visions and the revelations that Joseph Smith received during this about 7-year period in Kirtland from 1831 to 1838.
Today we're talking with Dr. Milt Backman, one of the great church historians and scholars on the LDS history. And particularly today we're talking about why Kirtland, Ohio, and the vicinity around Kirtland is such a critical part of LDS church history. Milt, you talked about Kirtland as being a period of time of visions and revelations that become the foundation for the doctrine of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how the doctrine of the Church developed and came about during this Kirtland period, and how Joseph plays such a significant role in this?
Joseph gradually learned the doctrines, and Joseph gradually made these doctrines available to members of the church. And as a result of the visions and revelations and work on the inspired revision of the Bible, Joseph gained and members of the church gained an increased understanding of the Godhead, the Father and the Son being separate and distinct individuals. They gained an increased understanding of the creation, the fall, the atonement, life beyond the grave with the 3 degrees of glory, information about one subject after another. So it was a period of unusual doctrinal development. And many of these doctrines were unfolded in Kirtland, but were not really made available in public in sermons of Joseph Smith until Nauvoo. Mm-hmm. And then during the same period of remarkable revelations, there was a tremendous expansion in the organization of the church. In New York, we had the two elders, we had the Aaronic priesthood quorums. But during that 7-year period in Ohio, we had the first bishopric, the first bishop and his counselors. We had the first presidency organized. We had the first patriarch. We had the first quorum of the 12 apostles. We had the first high council. We had the first quorum of 70 and a second quorum of 70 and the 7 president 70s. All these offices were organized in Ohio during this very short period of time, and they were all based upon revelations that the prophet Joseph Smith received. In other words, the basic structure of church government as we know it today was unfolded basically in Ohio.
One of the things you mentioned there, Milt, was that the Prophet Joseph Smith's work on what we call the Joseph Smith translation or the inspired translation, inspired version, what role did that play in all of this doctrinal development and the period of revelations? What do you see as the role of Joseph's work on the revising and translating of the Bible in this?
Much of the information that he learned was not published, except some of it appeared in Revelations. For example, during the inspired revision, he learned that the children should be baptized at 8. That was later in Court of Revelation. Much of the information then was published, especially regarding the book of Genesis. It was initially published in Kirtland. Mm-hmm. And so some of this was published, but some of it was just made available by Joseph to members of the church. Some of it was so revolutionary in one sense that Joseph hesitated in talking to others about it. Mm-hmm. But, and we don't have really in the sermons of Joseph reference to the Father and the Son having tangible bodies of flesh and bones until Nauvoo. But on the other hand, you had members of the church who saw the Father and the Son, and they described in detail the Father and the Son. They learned that God created man in his image. And I found a very interesting article written by Truman Cole, the minister of the Presbyterian Congregational Church in Ohio. And Truman Cole said that one of the unusual beliefs of the Latter-day Saints was they believed in a material God. Mm-hmm. Now, that was totally revolutionary. Exactly. Almost everyone believed in the Trinity, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, three persons of one sense, that God is a spirit. But Joseph learned that spirit is matter. And so the concept of God was one of his significant contributions, mm-hmm. was made known to Joseph, but he gradually made it available to members, and many of the members of the church really didn't learn the concept until Nauvoo, but the principles were unfolded in Kirtland.
You know, I've always been told, and look at the revelations that come in Kirtland, that come as a result of Joseph's work on the Bible, is that that may have been a catalyst for Joseph to ask questions or to go to the Lord on things. How would you say that? What role would that be?
Well, I'm convinced that Joseph often had to do his part, and he had to ask the question mm-hmm. before he received the revelation. Just didn't caught him automatically. And so as Joseph thought and as he pondered, he received revelation after revelation. So certainly his work on the Bible stimulated the questions, mm-hmm. and it led to answers. And then Joseph was the first to learn about it, but those who were helping, like Sidney Rigdon, he would have learned those principles at the same time. And then Joseph would have made that information available to others. And so subsequently, the revelations and the work on the inspired revision of the Bible would have led Joseph into learning many concepts that otherwise he wouldn't have learned.
So the doctrine comes as a result of those great revelations, and then the revelations guide in the development of the structure, the organization, and leadership of the church. It's very interesting and shows how important Kirtland is. I'm Brent Topp, your host on Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, and today we're talking with Dr. Milt Backman, author of Heavens Resound, A History of the Latter-day Saints in Ohio, 1831 to 1838. We've talked about how significant it was in the period of great visions and revelations, a great period of time in the doctrinal development and the establishment of the church in greater detail with the leadership of the church. Well, Mill, tell us about how Kirtland becomes a place of gathering to the saints, and why do we go as a church from New York to Ohio? What brings the church to Kirtland for this great period of doctrinal and revelatory experience?
The first extensive missionary journey in the history of the church was by the four Lamanite missionaries. And remember that two of the Lamanite missionaries were witnesses to the Book of Mormon, one of the eight witnesses, and then Oliver Cowdery, one of the three witnesses. And another of the missionaries was Parley P. Pratt. And Parley was converted while he was out preaching the need for restoration. Huh. And Parley was invited to participate, or called by God to participate, in this Lamanite missionary. So it would have been Parley who would have led the other elders to the Kirtland area, because that's where he had lived. Mm-hmm. And Parley knew that people in that area were seeking and searching and investigating, like he had. And so when the missionaries arrived in Kirtland, they immediately went to the home of Sidney Rigdon. Now, Sidney Rigdon was the minister and mentor to community next to Kirtland. And they went to Sidney Rigdon, and they knew that Sidney Rigdon was looking for restoration. Many people at that time were seeking and searching for additional light and knowledge. But they also knew that there were problems with Sidney Rigdon, because even though he was a leading restorationist preacher, Sidney Rigdon believed he had the authority of God. He believed in priesthood of believers. That was the common belief. He had the authority. And then another major emphasis of Sidney and others, Bible alone. They were trying to restore the truth by just using the Bible. And so when the missionaries approached him and told him about the restoration, immediately he hesitated. Now, wait a minute. I have the authority. You tell me you have the... I have the authority. And then they brought and presented him a copy of the Book of Mormon. A Book of Mormon? I believe in Bible alone. But the difference between Sidney and many of the other ministers and other people was that Sidney said, I will investigate. And he urged the members of his congregation, search for the truth and hold fast to that which is true. So he was willing to investigate. But during his investigation, he became very upset because 17 members of his congregation became Latter-day Saints. But meanwhile, he was finally converted. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, there were many, many others who were searching and seeking, and they were given a copy of the Book of Mormon. In fact, the missionaries arrived carrying carpet bags filled with copies of the Book of Mormon, and they were distributed. And many of the people were like Parley when he read it. Sleeping was a burden, and the people were reading it prayerfully. And suddenly, one community after another throughout the Western Reserve, in that part of the country, one person after another began joining the church. Why, John Murdoch was out looking for restoration of the priesthood. And the missionary said, we have the priesthood. And then he joined the church. Philo Dibble joined the church the day he met the missionaries because he had been looking for all those principles. There were people who were reading the Book of Mormon almost day and night. And one 12-year-old, Mary Rollins, was so interested in reading it that there wasn't a copy available. So someone loaned her a copy of the Book of Mormon. She went home and read it all night. Then they said, well, you keep it a few more days. So one person after another investigated, and within 1 month, 130 people approximately joined the church. That was probably almost as many people as there were in New York after the church had been organized. And that's in 1 month. Mm-hmm. So this was a remarkable development in Ohio.
And how the Lord had prepared their hearts, because they were seekers. They were seekers after truth.
And they were not only seekers, they were willing to seek.
Because
there were a lot of seekers, but they were seeking and searching, and then they were willing to pray and read the Book of Mormon, and they felt the power of God. They received the Holy Ghost, they were baptized, and then basically their lives were changed.
Wow. When did the Prophet Joseph learn about these 130 converts, and what impact did that have on Joseph about the great missionary success and the conversions in the Kirtland area?
Well, after the conversion of these people, there was a problem of leadership, and some of these early converts were asked to be in charge of church affairs, and one was Sidney Rigdon. And he said, what am I supposed to do? I don't even know all the doctrines of the church. I need help. And then another one is a hatter from Painesville. Painesville, that's Edward Partridge was this hatter, and he was seeking a return to the ancient Christian order, but he said, I'm not going to join the church till I meet Joseph. Everything depends on Joseph. He's a prophet, the church is true. If he's not a prophet, the church isn't true. So he said, I want to meet Joseph. So Sidney wanted to tell Joseph we needed help. Edward Partridge wanted to decide whether or not Joseph was a prophet. So they traveled to New York, and they found that Joseph was living temporarily with his parents, and they had moved to Waterloo near Fayette, where the church was organized. So it happened that when they arrived, Joseph was preaching in his parents' home to a small group of people. And they walked in and sat and listened to Joseph. And when Joseph was through speaking, Edward Partridge walked up and said, I'd like to be baptized. He was baptized the next day. And then Sidney Rigdon said, I'm one of the leaders of the church. We need help. So what did Joseph do? He went to the Lord and asked what should be done. And he received a series of revelations, section 35, 36, 37, 38. And what did Joseph learn? Joseph should move to Ohio, and all the New York saints should move to Ohio. That meant the people were going to sell their homes, leave their friends. It was going to be great economic sacrifice. And then they were told, well, you're commanded to go to the Ohio where you'll receive my law, and you'll be endowed with power from on high. That opened the door for about 200 New York saints to leave their homes between January and June 1831 and travel to Ohio along with the prophet Joseph Smith.
I'm Brent Topp, your host of Past Impressions, and today we're talking with Dr. Milt Backman, Emeritus Professor of LDS Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. Milt, we've talked about how the saints got to Kirtland and what significance it was in the history of the church, but I think every reader of the Doctrine and Covenants or even a casual perusal of the revelations in the Doctrine and Covenants will see the name of another town that becomes very, very significant in the history of the church, and that is Hiram, Ohio. Why don't you tell us about the significance of Hiram and how Joseph and Sidney end up there and what goes on in that particular part of Ohio?
When Joseph Smith arrived in Kirtland, he arrived at the home of Newell K. Whitney. And, of course, Newell K. Whitney didn't know Joseph, but he has been praying that Joseph would come. And subsequently, when Joseph arrived, he walked into the Newell K. Whitney store and said, Newell K. Whitney, thou art the man. And he was confused. He said, well, you have the advantage of me, sir. I couldn't call you by name. But I'm Joseph the prophet. You prayed me here. And so Newell K. Whitney invited Joseph to move into his home. And shortly thereafter, a number of people gathered to listen to Joseph in the home of Newell K. Whitney. And one was John Johnson. John Johnson traveled there with his wife and some other friends in the Hiram, Ohio, which is about 30 miles south of Kirtland. And during the conversation, Joseph Smith talked about the power of God being restored. And someone then said, well, her nickname was Elsa. Elsa Johnson cannot lift her arm. She's partly paralyzed. Why haven't you healed her? And Joseph didn't say anything. And then a few minutes later, he walked up, walked across the room, took hold of the hands of Elsa Johnson and said, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to be made whole. And she was instantly healed. And there were non-members there. And they wrote some of the most detailed descriptions we have of this healing. And I believe that probably John Johnson said because of this, if there's anything I can ever do to help you, let me help you. Well, shortly thereafter, after Joseph had arrived in February, the end of the summer, Joseph was interested in a place where he could work on the inspired revision of the Bible. The Newell K. Whitney home just wasn't satisfied. It was too crowded. There wasn't a space for him. But there was this large farmhouse 30 miles south in Hiram. And I'm convinced that Joseph approached Newell K. or John Johnson and said, I need a place to stay. I need a place where I can work on the inspired revision of the Bible. May I stay at your home? And he was invited to stay at the John Johnson home in Hiram, along with Sidney Rigdon. Sidney Rigdon had a small home next door. And the principal activity of Joseph at that time was the work on the inspired revision of the Bible. He was working on it in Kirtland, had been working on it before, and working, of course, in New York. But now this is where he just concentrated. And he received many revelations there as he was working on the inspired revision. So that was a period when Joseph and Sidney were working. Joseph, and of course, the inspired revision was accomplished through revelation. So Joseph was just dictating revelation after revelation. And so that was the headquarters for 6 months, and probably would have remained headquarters if it had not been for the mobbing.
Okay, well, in fact, at Hiram is one of the great stories in the history of the church of the tarring and feathering. Why don't you tell us what leads to the opposition and the persecution that results in the mobbing and the tarring and feathering of Joseph and Sidney?
Well, the mobbing in Hiram was just the first of many, many instances where Latter-day Saints were persecuted. Remember, they were driven from Jackson County and forced out of Clay County and driven out of Missouri, and they were driven out of Kirtland and eventually had to leave Nauvoo. And I think that there are multiple forces that explain reasons for persecution. Someone has said to simplify history is to falsify history. So there's just multiple forces. Some people would have persecuted for one reason. But one reason that Latter-day Saints were persecuted is because they were considered a threat to the traditional lifestyle of the people. They were different. They were very different. They believed in a prophet. They emphasized education. They believed in being chaste, and they believed that excessive drinking was improper. They were different from some of the people. Mm-hmm. And because they were different, they were considered peculiar. And then they accepted Joseph Smith as a prophet of the Lord. Well, since someone said, well, you've accepted Joseph as a prophet, therefore you won't accept our political leaders. So they engaged in political competition. So one factor after another. Some people persecuted Joseph for one reason, some for another reason. In my research on Ohio, I read hundreds and hundreds of newspapers, and I found some very interesting articles about the persecution of the abolitionists. Mm. The abolitionists were opposed to slavery, and others were too. But the abolitionists, according to many, were advocating programs that would lead to a disruption of American democracy, would lead to breaking up of the nation. And so many people were persecuting the abolitionists as they persecuted the Mormons. Mm-hmm. Abolitionists were beaten. They were tarred and feathered, just as Joseph and Sidney were tarred and feathered. They were driven from their homes as the Latter-day Saints. They were persecuted because they were different.
Yeah.
And so Hiram experience really ended, in one sense, following the mobbing and almost killing of Joseph and Sidney. They were badly beaten, and they were tarred and feathered, and Sidney Rigdon almost died as a result of it. And as a result of that, this approximate six-month experience in Hiram was interrupted, and eventually Joseph then returned to Kirtland. And from then on, Kirtland remained the headquarters of the church from the end of the Hiram experience until their expulsion in 1838.
We've been privileged to be taught today by Dr. Milton Backman, and in our next episode, we will continue our discussion of Kirtland and some of the great events associated with Kirtland. And so we thank you for listening to this program, Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel.